College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
Nobody beats the record of Mr. Monday Night back in the 80s.
What were you, 28-2?
28-3 in multiple seasons on Monday Night Football, yeah. A record that will never, ever be broken.
Okay, the article that I posted earlier shows exactly how he manipulates the data. And yes, maybe he was right, but he did it in a way that made it. He didn't take into effect third party. He didn't. There was a bunch of different things, and you're like, yeah. And he also waits until the very last minute. It's not like he's predicting it
again. Everybody's got every day. There's going to be new polls.
Yeah,
and if you're on social media, there's like all these different poll places. Just relax. Worry about your life. Enjoy life.
Exactly.
You sound like Greg Stocker
right now.
Yeah, amen.
No, I mean, that's what you do. I mean, who cares about polls now?
By the way, breaking news.
Is this breaking news?
Yes, and I just saw this on social media. This is huge. Speaking of Greg Stocker.
Oh, no.
Did you know that Greg Stocker will be appearing at the Barrett News Media Industry Summit?
Uh-oh.
Are you aware of this, Greg Stocker?
Sure.
I just saw this.
Okay.
1210 hey, WPHT when you're there, program director Greg Stocker in attendance.
You know who won't be appearing.
Yeah, when you're there, ask him why they suddenly stopped calling Tony and stopped giving the Tony Bruno show or Tony Bruno Award, not show award, the Tony Bruno Award that was there since the inauguration of Barrett Sports Media Group.
Okay, I'll
ask him that.
Did Pat McAfee not give back the trophy?
No, Pat McAfee has his trophy, and Clay Travis were the first two winners. I think they've done pretty well for themselves.
But when Tony was canceled in cancel culture, the height of cancel culture, Barrett Sports Media also canceled Tony.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But I don't hold any grudges.
We get Jason on here. Start vetting him.
Yes, I will be speaking at the in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So
there you
beautiful.
Go. Going down to the nation's capital, baby.
Isn't Scioli's army going down there?
Rich was at the RNC. He's done traveling for the year. And no more Fridays off either.
He's going to Cape May, baby. That's where he'll be going for the rest of the summer. On the way to Cape May.
But I don't think he'll be creating children, which is a very interesting conversation. And, you know, I've seen so many people talking about this and a lot of social media influencers, specifically on the conservative side. And I don't really have I shouldn't say this because it's a talk show. You're supposed to have a take and don't suck, right? I'm just one of these people that I don't care what other people do in their personal lives. I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care how you parent your child. But right. I do find it interesting. And I don't think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. A new study is showing why there is a growing share of U.S. adults that are not having kids these days. And I've seen a lot of people tweeting about this, saying the fertility rate has reached a historic low and people are concerned about it. As a growing share of women between age 25 and 44 have never given birth, and rates aren't expected to pick up anytime soon, with the survey showing a growing share of young Americans say they are unlikely to have kids. That according to the Pew Research Center, which is interesting because, the cost of living is just astronomical. And I'm one of these, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I do believe this. I do think the American dream, I don't want to say it's dead, but man, you got to work your ass off and get a second or a third job or be lucky enough to have a spouse that makes six figures. And you got to be, we saw the number and I gave this, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, Tony, I saw it pop up on TV when Dawn was doing the news, you know, to have a quote comfortable life this day and age, they are saying you need to have a household income of $186,000. Now, if you just...
That's average. If you go to California, New York, Boston, really expensive places, L.A.
Right. You're broke. You can't live. You can't afford to live there. And
to be considered upper class, you have to make over $450,000, I think it was.
The average American citizen makes $59,000 a year. So let's just say you're married to your wife or husband and you both make 60 grand. Well, that's a household income of 120 grand. You're $66,000 short of living comfortably in this country in this day and age. That, to me, is probably one of the biggest reasons why people don't want to have kids. It's expensive enough just for a man and a woman together these days.
And seniors, especially, you know, on a fixed income with their Social Security.
Well, they're
or whatever.
Not having kids, though.
No, they're not having kids, but they have grandkids, and they want to see their grandkids, like I do. I love to go up and see my grandkids.
And a lot of grandparents are actually taking care of their grandkids.
But the grandparents are now draining their 401ks and their retirement income just to try to, you know, get to do things that they wanted to do when they thought, you know, after working all their lives, they would have enough money to travel and do fun things. And some people do, mm-hmm. but a lot of people don't. And they're being affected by this as well. And thank God that Joe Biden beat Medicare. I remember he beat Medicare.
If I were smart, I'd say thank you and leave.
Yes, and you have left. But also very interesting here, they say 44% want to focus on other things. 38% say they have a concern about the state of the world. I don't know, maybe those are the ones that have dreams about and nightmares about climate change at 2 in the morning. 36% say cost of raising a child, and 26% say concerns about the environment and other social factors out there. But I do think more than ever, and I know Stocker typically will push back on this and say we were always like this, every generation is the same. It does seem to me, and maybe I'm getting 40 on 80, being old man, get off my lawn. We live in a me world, and we play some of these clips from the libs of TikTok where these Gen Zers and younger millennials come home from work, and then they go on TikTok and they cry and have these meltdowns that they had to work 8 hours.
They said the same thing about Gen Z or Gen X, dude.
That's what I'm saying. You always push back on that.
We were the MTV generation, and it was all about me, and it was all about us. And I remember the boomers and the greatest generation, you know, didn't understand Gen X and all that stuff. So look, it's been going on forever.
Here's where I think the difference is, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the Gen Xer.
Yeah.
Gen X was rebelling against the establishment authority and the powers and control of telling you what to do. I don't feel like this generation is doing that. I feel like this generation feels overwhelmed with too much responsibility on their plate. Am I wrong with that?
Yes.
I can't make dinner, then I can't hang out with my friends. I don't have time to go to the gym. But you have time to post a video of you complaining about it.
Well, this generation cares more about that. Like they're too much in their feelings. You know what I mean?
That's kind of my point.
Everything is about them, their feelings, and how it makes them feel. And I need a me day, and I need a mental health day.
Bingo.
Let me go to therapy and talk about me more often. They do care about me more than other people do.
Right.
And they're all over-medicated because they all have ADHD or, you know, attention deficit disorder, which is what it is. Everybody's depressed. Everybody needs medication. Everybody needs drugs to get through life. That's the world we live in. And people can't cope, and you're right. But the people who can't cope don't normally go on social media, as you pointed out, and cry about their lives.
Yeah, they do.
But they shouldn't. Who cares? Worry about your own life. Nobody's going to care about your feelings when they don't know you. And people who do know you most of the time don't care about your feelings.
Well, here's another difference is that it is now people are being told that it is okay to be selfish. It is okay to think about yourself only over other people. And I think that there is an awareness that if you have children, you can no longer think about yourself, just yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So then they're like, well, geez, I don't want to not think about myself. I want me, like you said, Nick. And so then they're making the decision. They're like, well, I don't want to have to give that up.
Right.
I don't want to have to give that me lifestyle up. Also, I think that the monetary stuff, I've heard this many times, and this is the same thing I tell everybody that says, yeah, you know, we're holding off on having children because we really can't afford it right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you wait until you can afford to have children, you will never have children. I mean, you look at all the quote unquote poor people that are having children, and somehow or another they're surviving, right? So stop with that excuse. Throw that one out, because you will never be able to actually afford to have children. You just make it work somehow.
Mm-hmm. According to the survey published on Thursday, they found nearly 40% of the older group said parenthood, and I think this is exactly what you're illustrating, Robin, quote, just never happened, while the majority of the younger group without kids, 57%, said they just don't want to have children. So you have that mindset of, I'm never going to have kids, I don't want them. And then to your point, those who say, well, once I get my career situated and I'm making good money, we'll settle down, we'll do it. We'll do it at 38 or 42 years old. And then that time arrives, and a lot of them are like, you know what, on second thought, no, not doing it, or it just never materializes, right?
Yeah, the second you have a child, your life changes forever, at least for 18 years.
Yeah. I died. You know, I died 10 years
ago. People having children, like my oldest son, he has two kids. They're young, and he's 46.
Yep.
But they tried so hard to have kids, and they finally have. So a lot of people will wait because they don't, not because they're waiting, but because they don't have the ability to have children, and they have to go through all of the processes, you know, to get it finally done right. And thankfully, they do. But they love their grand, and I love having grandchildren. Well, they're the only grandchildren I'll ever have.
Your eggs, a woman's eggs, are the most viable between like 16, which I don't recommend. So don't say that. Ooh, let's go out and do that. But between, you know, 16 and 30, that's when they're the most viable. After 30, there's, and 35 is a major roadblock, that the eggs are just not as ripe anymore. And it's much more difficult to have children after 35.
But the eggs are still expensive, Robin. They've gone up from $1.50 a dozen to $3.
Try free human range. Eggs.
My son has 13 chickens down in Maryland, down there in Centerville, Maryland.
Uh-huh.
Eggs every day, baby. And they're free range. They roam all over the entire lot. I mean, they probably walk like 5 miles, and they eat everything.
Well, don't you also, I also wonder if kids, the young generation now, the 18 to 25-year-olds or 30-year-olds, the Gen Zers that are deciding not to have children, they have been told by society that their parents did a crappy job and that they are screwed up because it's their parents' fault. And then they're like, well, if my parents couldn't do a good job, why do I think I could do a good job? I don't want to screw up my kids, so let's just not have any.
Well, I do think there's something to that, because nowadays you got all these things that the Gen Z crowd is into, and what are we always saying? Well, let's ban TikTok, and let's ban this. Like, I say, no, let's not have these bans from the government. Let's have better parenting. Let's have parents that are actually involved and attached to their child's lives instead of parents themselves. And I'm talking about younger parents, primarily in my demographic, in my age group, where a lot of parents get home from work and they just zone out and swipe on Facebook all day, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're involved with your child, then you probably won't have to get to the point where you're considering, hey, I think the government should ban this. TikTok is corrupting my kid. Put time limits on that stuff for your kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think Biden will have another address today to talk about time limits on your kid's social media use after talking about the Supreme Court yesterday. That's his next task.
Honestly, as sexist as this may sound, but since I'm a woman, I get to say it.
Shoot your shot, Robin. Go ahead.
I would love to see a return to a single household income where one of the parents, it doesn't necessarily have to be the woman, but you know, you look at daycare costs and all you're doing is paying somebody else to take care of your child. For the most part.
Or wanting the government to pay for your daycare of your child.
My sister was complaining about that a couple of weeks ago, how expensive it is. She's got a newborn.
And your children need you to fight for them. They need you to take care of them. And they need you to show them the right way. And I think homeschooling is certainly in this day and age, if our schools are still the way they are in the foreseeable future, I would be homeschooling my kids in a heartbeat.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Cut sheet part due on the way, as well as what occurred today in music history, which should be very upbeat and chipper considering Phil Omquist's Yankees pounded the Phillies last night, 14-4.
And the Mets also scored 15 runs last night. Did you see that?
Yeah, what's up with them all of a sudden with life?
So the Mets scored 15 runs and the Yankees scored 14 runs on the same night.
Unbelievable.
And he had a tall stack of chocolate chip pancakes.
Yes,
Phil
did.
Yeah.
Phil was a lifesaver yesterday.
He was.
You imagine Phil just hammering those pancakes at IHOP?
I love it.
His Jets hat on backwards.
No, he had it on forward.
Oh, beautiful. 9:27. Let's see what Stocker has lined up for what we like to call What's on the Cut Sheet Part 2.
What's on the Cut Sheet
Part 2? Atlas of the Country Part Due, sponsored by Discover Lancaster. Adventure awaits in Lancaster County. Experience the thrill of kayaking and hiking with Sheik's Rock Outfitters. Explore scenic underwaterways and conquer rugged trails. Discover the beauty of nature. Visit discoverlancaster.com to plan your trip today. Discoverlancaster.com. Thank you, Discover Lancaster, for sponsoring the ever important Tuesday edition of What's on the Cut Sheet Part Due. Your favorite senator, Nick Kale, is who?
Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah.
From Louisiana.
I love him.
He's a gem.
So, he spoke yesterday about Kamala Harris. And it's being interpreted as, this is the wrong... We've had this discussion on the show. Is that, what's the right attack for the Republicans to do against Kamala Harris?
Crush her on the field policy.
And they think there's wisdom out there that if you crush her on her intelligence or anything else, how she got her job,
right.
Going to turn right. off women.
You can be labeled. You can be sexist or mm-hmm. racist yep. or whatever is they come up with.
Well, Kennedy went after her the way she speaks last night or yesterday, comparing, like saying that Margaret Thatcher never said like and giggled and did all of that stuff. So I want to get all of your opinions on what Kennedy said.
Mm-hmm.
Cut 11, Phil. Senator Kennedy, go.
Well, what I was going to say, Neil, if I could finish my thought, when you look at the polls, fair or not, what the polls, the crosstab show, is that those Americans who have an opinion of the vice president think that, number one, she's a bit of a ding-dong, and number two, that she is a member of the loon wing of the Democratic Party.
Uh-oh.
She's a San Francisco
That member of the loon wing, Senator, that I'm not, you know, casting aspersions either way, though. That member of the loon wing is now, you know, dead even with Donald Trump in one battle state ground after another. Now, I'm not saying that might last. I am mm-hmm. saying that this loon is surging, and if the Republican approach to her is to treat her like a loon and a cackle, and she is just an empty suit, I wonder how far that'll go.
Well, I'm sorry if that offends you, Neil, but I'm just telling you what the people of America think.
I'm just telling you what the polls are showing right now. Now, if you think they're short-lined, they're not going to last, and you're okay with this approach of talking about her laugh and nasty and disrespectful and all this stuff that Donald Trump has said, you don't think part of that is going to kill you at the polls?
I'm telling you what I think the American people think right now, based on the polling that I've seen. And let me say it again. I think that, fair or not, and it may upset you, but fair or not, the American people think, those who have an opinion of the vice president, think that, number one, she's a little bit of a ding-dong. She's not a serious person. They've had one vegetable in chief. They don't want another. And they also think that she is a member of the loon wing of the Democratic Party.
Oh.
She's a San Francisco Democrat. She believes in abortion on demand. She believes that Israel should just give the Palestinians anything that they want. She believes in an open border. She thinks criminals or cops are a bigger problem than criminals. She's proud of what she and the president did in Afghanistan. She believes in strength. Our national security strength or weakness, that if we just sit down with our enemies and have a cup of hot cocoa and give them a hug, that they'll be nice to us. I don't know
if she suggested the cup of hot coffee.
He was joking, Neil.
Neil Cavuto a cock or what?
But I would say the thing that I actually noticed the most, it's nice to actually see somebody from the home team on the home channel actually sparring with each other instead of kissing each other's butts.
No, I agree. I'm not saying that Cavuto has to be rah-rah-rah Trump.
But like policy, policy aside, all valid because he nailed all the policy stuff. Loon Wing, I have no problem with that. Cackle.
I love ding dong.
No problem
ding
with
dong.
That. San Francisco.
Not Rama Lama ding dong. Now, if he had gone Rama Lama ding dong, that would have been awesome.
San Francisco Democrat, no issue. But I personally have no issue with the ding dong stuff. But if you're going to call her a vegetable, there are going to be people out there that get bothered by that. And I don't care that they get bothered, but I do think that will show up on election day because look, maybe it's water under the bridge because it's not going to change anything anyway. Maybe you already made your bed and you have to lie in it. You could have Republicans now come out and say that Kamala Harris is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Probably not going to change the way people feel, right? Like, 99% of people have made up their mind. And I don't think Kamala Harris replacing Joe really changes anybody's views. I mean, it's because you can't separate Joe from Kamala. They're tied together at the hip. They were an administration. They still are an administration. So.
But she's not. She doesn't have one foot in the grave like
true.
Biden did.
True.
I mean,
and she's further left than Joe too, which is really bizarre.
Yes, but there
as
are
I said
people...
it a million times, though, Robin, play her hits,
yes,
which are misses. That's all you have to do. Just get video and audio of her and play it, and then have the media go, you know, carry water for her saying she didn't say that.
I also said this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not sure if you guys agree with this, Tony and Robin, because you weren't here when I said this. For whatever reason, when it comes to messaging with Republicans, they seem to swing and miss, and we can sit here and talk about the Harris-Biden administration's failed policies, and we can give border stats till our eyes bleed. We could talk about inflation. For whatever reason, that doesn't seem to resonate sometimes. I think you have to be what they've been for the last couple of weeks. And Trump's a great storyteller. J.D. Vance, as soon as he got the nomination, told some great stories. You got to be a good storyteller. And I think that's where the Democrats are really good. They tell a good story.
Even if it's made up, but they tell a good story.
Correct.
No, but we have now reached the bottom of the septic tank portion of the campaigning. You know, you got Josh Shapiro pretending he's Obama. So you got everybody's going lower than everybody else.
Right. It's like
and so there's no more kids gloves. And oh, she's a woman. Be careful what you say about her and all the other stuff. It's now down and dirty time. Let's be honest. Under 100 days, you know how it's going to go.
Bring back
it's
mean tweets.
No, it's not even about mean tweets. It's about nobody cares about substance because we live in a world where substance doesn't matter. It's all about the shiny object. Yeah, she's the shiny object.
You're right. Facts and substance really don't matter. It's about feelings.
This is cut 15 here, Phil. Interrogated, abused, and tortured. This is from a January 6th prisoner released just 5 days ago.
Saw this.
He tells his harrowing story of jail time. He says it's, quote, like a scene out of a movie. His name is John Strand. He attended the Capitol on June 6th as the friend and bodyguard of Dr. Simone Gold, who was scheduled and legally permitted to speak on Capitol grounds that day. However, when the Oath Keepers and Strand escorted Dr. Gold to her speaking location, the chaos at the Capitol had already begun. By the way, this video and story is courtesy of The Blaze. While Strand and Gold were uninvolved in the breaching of the Capitol building and never once participated in violence, they made the mistake of entering the building along with the crowd. They entered and departed peacefully like so many others, but this was enough to land both of them in hot water with the DOJ. Both Strand and Gold were some of the first to be arrested and charged with four misdemeanors as well as the 1512 felony. While Gold took a plea deal involving 60 days in prison, Strand, outraged by the obvious injustice, fought the charges. For his resistance, he was convicted on all charges and sentenced to 32 months in prison. However, now that the 1512 has been overturned by the Supreme Court, Strand has been set free. He did his interview with The Blaze yesterday, and he tells the story of what it was like in prison. This is Cut 15, Phil, go.
I'll use the word miserable. You have a heightened sense of pain and of stress and of angst about everything. So the way I described it was my time in prison was actually split between two facilities. The first half in Miami, where I was actually viciously abused in an isolation environment for about four straight months, which was essentially like being waterboarded. And when I was released from there and transferred to another location where it was a little less oppressive, it felt like I was trying to breathe the oxygen of freedom through a straw from underneath a swamp. So,
Blaze correspondent Joe Hanneman has covered your story extensively, in fact, going back a couple of years.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think first brought Dr. Gold and I into acquaintance was the fact that you were being held in solitary confinement, which is essentially torture.
Yeah.
We'll start there. But what she was most concerned about was that we needed to get this message out, but there was a problem with getting this message out.
Yes, there was.
We get this message out, they tend to punish you more. Is that
make
correct?
Make it worse. That's exactly what happened to me. They fabricated a whole series of ridiculous circumstances to put me in isolation for a couple of weeks, basically to say, watch out. You know, we'll crush you if you look sideways. And I was actually just looking to follow all their rules. They didn't even give me the rule book when I walked in the door, which is a BOP policy violation. So they were already off on the wrong trail. But they pulled me out for a couple of days, and then a story that I had nothing to do with went viral on media. Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene reported on me being tortured and abused, and they put me in this interrogation room and grilled me about this like I had something to do with it, like a scene out of a movie, and then threw me back in, and I wasn't seen again for 3.5 months.
And this is...
Wow. That
great
is...
Great beard, though. That great is, beard, great hair.
Oh, yeah. And how about Jill Savage now working for The Blaze, former sports anchor and reporter? Yeah, I mean, I believe when these people talk after what they go through, I believe them. And I think there's no doubt, and I've said this, there's a lot of people that had their rights violated on that day.
Absolutely.
And denied due process. And I think it's all about setting a precedent, whether it's a violation of your constitutional rights or not. What they wanted to do, and you heard them there, they put you in isolation to break you. And they're trying to set a precedent and a deterrent that, you know, that won't be tolerated ever again, whether you committed a crime or not. I mean, and that guy, obviously, based on his account, really did nothing wrong and probably should have taken a plea, but he stood up for himself. And sadly, I can't imagine. Human beings, they don't do well in isolation.
No.
Prime example, the pandemic.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Lockdowns are not good for humans.
Yep.
Nope.
Amen.
Not only that, but human beings are capable of doing such atrocious things when they say, oh, it was an order. Mm-hmm. You don't have to follow the orders. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing how many people, whether it's back in the days of Nazis to here in the United States.
Robin's down chilling now. She's got that.
Venezuela. Yeah. I took a little bit more medicine.
How's that day cool, baby?
But what's happening in Venezuela, I don't know if you've seen any of that, but there are videos of a few, not all of them. Most of them are actually taking orders and fulfilling them, and shooting their own people for standing up against
Maduro.
Yeah. But you are seeing videos of certain people, certain guards and police officers that are taking their uniform on and are standing with the people. And that is amazing.
That's a real resistance right there.
Yeah, I saw that. Our buddy Sean Farris has been tweeting about that a lot.
Will Cain was on the Stephen A. Smith podcast where they debated DEI and calling, is it racist? Was the discussion to call Kamala Harris a DEI hire. Mm-hmm. And Will Cain asked Stephen A. Smith, why is it, you know, all they talk about, they being the left, is you know, DEI hires, DEI hires. But when the right calls them, you know, a DEI hire, then all of a sudden it's racist.
Yep.
So Stephen A. Smith explained what was different about that. This is cut 16, Phil, go.
Saying that I don't have a problem with what you're asking because you bring up the part about those who say she's a product of DEI. So why was it a complimentary thing before, but now it's a racist thing? Now, that's a legitimate question, okay? What I would say to you is most people don't view her as a product of DEI. When we talk about DEI, we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Of course, we talk about equity, we talk about inclusion, we talk about diversity. And some of the things that you're doing, the reason why they're in existence is because of the iniquities of this system and people who run it for decades upon decades upon decades. That's why so many things like affirmative action and other things had to come into existence because of the iniquitous actions of those who played a different game and they engaged in prejudice and they engaged in bigotry and they engaged in marginalization and pigeonholing and denying folks the opportunities even though they deserved it. In the case of a Harris who came from an HBCU, who was a district attorney in the city of San Francisco, a state attorney general in the state of California, the vice president of the United States of America, what we're saying is the qualifications on that resume are so expansive at this point in time that DEI shouldn't even be mentioned. mentioned. And for folks to bring that up, you're doing it because not you, Will, but folks who are bringing it up now because they're trying to find something to swing at to sort of assist in alienating potential voters that may go in her direction. That would be my answer to your question.
I would say this. It's mentioned because she's been proven to be in over her head for 3.5 years. I've said she is the poster child of DEI because her and Joe, they ran on this. They said verbatim, this is the most diverse, equitable, and inclusive administration in the history of the United States. I'll never forget this. My mom always told me, two wrongs don't make a right. So to go back to Stephen A. with the inequitous actions of the past, that was a wrong. This is a wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right and even things out. To me, you get to where you get to in life based on your merit, not based on your gender or your race. Now, if she's crushed it for 3.5 years, if she was the second coming of the greatest Veep in the history, nobody would be calling her a DEI hire because they would be like, wow, man, this lady's come in and she's kicked ass and take names. But she's been reassigned, rebranded, and reshuffled more than, you know, than a refurbished Apple iPhone 7. It's obvious.
I totally agree. And here's the reason why I know both of those guys really well. And then not that it matters, but I respect them both. But Stephen A's point about her career in San Francisco, that's documented. We know she was an assistant district attorney. We know she was a DA. You know, she was the attorney general. That's all history.
Yeah.
But when she started running for president, which was the day one that she got into the Senate, she started campaigning for president. And then she campaigned and got zero votes. Zero delegates. Then Joe Biden proclaimed that he had to have a black woman on the Supreme Court. He had to have a black woman in his cabinet. And that's when she became the DEI candidate, because he picked her only because of her skin color and not because he wasn't hiring her as a prosecutor. She wasn't the vice president in charge of prosecutorial matters. She was the vice president, who was the borders are, and did all these other things that she failed to accomplish as the vice president of the United States.
And to your point, she'd actually be more qualified to be in Merrick Garland's role than she is as the vice president, right?
Exactly.
Michael Schellenberger did a great expose on Kamala Harris and her segregation in chief, as he calls it, Jotaka Edey, who led the 2020 effort to demand Biden pick a black woman as a vice president, and the 2024 scheme for Biden to back Harris and evade a vote
on the 25th
Amendment. Yeah. And you should read what he has it all and the documents to prove it. This woman wrote a letter to the Biden campaign demanding that he pick a black woman and put Kamala up as the number one pick.
All right, there you go. All right, coming up next, that'll do it for Cut Sheet Part 2. We'll find out what occurred today in music history and who won social media today, as well as what's on tap for 10 o'clock this morning. Pat Callahan?
Yes, he is.
All right, we'll see what Pat has lined up about 13 minutes.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Today, July 30th, we celebrate the birthdays of Brad Hargreaves from Third Eye Blind, who's 53, Jeffrey Hammond from Jethro Tull, who's 78, Buddy Guy, who's 88, and a heavenly birthday shout out to John Philip Sousa, yes, going way back, born on this day in 1892. Singles include If You Leave Me Now by Chicago in 1976, Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy on the same day, Shine by Motorhead in 83, and I Want to Be Somebody by Wasp in 84, and they're coming back this year. Albums include Out of Our Heads by The Stones in 65, Sublime's debut in 96, the soundtrack for Fast Times at Ridgemont High in 82, what a great soundtrack that is, and Leave a Scar by Dee Snider in 2021. Also in 2011, U2 wrapped up their 360 tour. In 88, Steve Winwood started a four-week run atop the singles chart with Roll With It. And in 87, David Bowie kicked off his Glass Spiders tour. But lastly, in 1991, a police officer was actually forced to tear up a traffic ticket given to the limo driver that Axl Rose was in after it made an illegal turn. The reason? Axl threatened to pull that night's Guns N' Roses show if the ticket was issued. Typical Axl. For KL Company, I'm Phil Unkwit.
You can almost hear Phil smiling there towards the end, can't you?
Yeah, you can. You can.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nice work.
Absolutely.
Tony Bruno, great show. Was up, brother. What do you say we run it back tomorrow?
Absolutely. Robin's got to get a special roaring round of applause. I started off strong and faded fast. She started off fading fast and finished strong.
They roared.
Well, thank you very much. And now I'm going to go.
I'm going to go to sleep until the Phillies play at like 6:40 tonight or on national TV.
Same here. Stay tuned. Pat Callahan's up next. Tony and Robin back with Greg and I tomorrow. Until then.
Good night, everybody.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.